Welcome back to syndicatednews.net. For tonight's segment of Men Matter, we're going to be playing an interview that we did with Samuel Jones from the Isle of Wight. Dr. Wardner and Dr. McGuire will discuss this tape once it's done. Today we're interviewing Samuel Z. Jones, and as we speak to him, we're going to be listening in the background to the sounds of the sea just off the undercliff of the Isle of Wight in the UK. Samuel Jones is a British writer who lives on the Isle of Wight on the southern coast, just in the English Channel. And from the highest point on the island, he tells me, you can see England very clearly. He has founded the Save the Fathers Union. Samuel, welcome to syndicatednews.net.
Hi, Ruthie.
Samuel, why do groups like the Save the Fathers Union and the wider Fathers' Rights Movement exist at all? And what are the issues that you are protesting and lobbying for? Tell us about that.
Well, the bottom line is that fathers have no legal rights in regard to their children. Fathers' role and responsibility as parents is simply not assumed in law. And when relationships and families break down, the father has no basic right to contact his children or any part in their life.
How about their education and health issues?
No, same again. Doesn't have any input whatsoever. On paper, yeah. But in practice, there's no provision for the father's input at all.
So in practice, is it always the mother who has rights to the children?
97% of the time in English cases, and that's a government statistic.
So how does this problem come about?
Well, there are several legal issues, but I'm just going to touch on one of maybe two. Basically, it goes to the root of law, which is that law is in England and very similarly in America. The law comes from three basic sources, and these are, well, the ones that concern us in this case are contract law and common law. And contract law is murder and theft are illegal because everybody basically knows that and nobody could actually argue with it. Contract law is what we all agree to individually on an individual basis. The rights of the police, the powers of the police, derive from a combination of the two. So the rights of the mother to be recognised as a parent derive from common law. Nobody could doubt that a mother has rights over her child. The rights of the father, though, come from contract law, which is basically an agreement with the mother. And this is ratified in law in the signing of the birth certificate, where the mother signs the birth certificate identifying the father, giving him parental rights, and he then signs the birth certificate surrendering those parental rights to the state. And this is then certified finally by the state operative who then signs the third signature, and hey presto, dad's rights are given and taken away in one movement without him even realising. And the reason I've touched on that particular aspect of the law is that virtually everyone is completely unaware of this when they sign a birth certificate. And if you don't sign the birth certificate, you're not legally the father.
So the same document that recognizes the father's legal status also takes it away?
Exactly.
And then if the father doesn't sign the birth certificate, he's not legally recognized?
Bingo. And it's almost exactly the same in the US.
This is frightening.
Yes. Yes. Very much. And as I say, most people don't realize this. There are other legal issues, like the exact wording of the childcare laws, the bills of rights regarding children, but they're fairly well known compared to this one, which is absolutely fundamental, and this is the underlying reason why lawmakers are so unwilling to move on this one, because it's a very complicated, tricky one to actually legislate, given that the problem goes back to the very roots of law.
So tell me about moving. When a mother wants to move across the country, is she able to?
In theory, I mean on paper, she has to actually take account of the father's feelings. In practice, she doesn't. And this goes to again, the wording of the more commonly known legal statutes, which state that everything must be done in the best interest of the child. It is not assumed that the father has any role to play in the best interest of the child, whereas it is assumed that the mother does, under law. So if mum argues, I'm not happy living in London, I want to live in Glasgow, which is at the other end of the country, she can actually legally argue that her being unhappy is not in the best interest of the child, and the court will ultimately grant her permission to move to Scotland or to Australia. And again, those are actually cases that have come up. Fathers can slow down mothers moving a great distance.
Now you explained the legal origin. What about the societal history? How did this situation develop from that angle?
Well, back in the late 70s and the early 80s, there was very little provision under law for single mothers, very little protection for them if the father just upped and left the family, or if the relationship broke. So the government here, as well as in other countries, instituted child support agencies. You may have a different name for it in the US.
The same name.
Well, same thing then.
Mm-hmm.
Their job is basically what was to try and ensure that absent fathers still shouldered the financial obligation of supporting a child. But right from their inception, they operate on the principle that all absent fathers are errants, that they've simply abandoned their kids. And, well, whatever the case was 20 years ago, that's not the case now. That assumption is still applied to all fathers, even though a great many more relationships break down, and a great many more families are single-parent families, quite often where the mother has left and taken the kids with her, or the relationship is simply split up.
So mothers basically have full legal rights and support for the children, and the fathers have absolutely nothing?
Basically, yes. There are some provisions on paper, but in practice, the courts can't enforce them.
Agencies not work in concert with the courts to try and find the best solutions when these families break up?
Not at all. The contact and access arrangements between fathers and their children is dealt with by the courts and the parents, and whether the father has any access is completely irrelevant to the child support agency. They're completely independent of the court, they have no consultation. It's assumed that the father has just abandoned his kids, and the agencies take a punitive attitude in enforcing child maintenance. Well, in an extreme scenario, a child can be born into a single parent family from the outset, e.g. it was a one night stand, or the father may not even know that he had a child, and the mother can still claim financial support from him.
How common is it? Because it sounds like a rather blanket statement.
Well, that was, as I say, an extreme scenario, but there are countless scenarios. More common is where the couple breaks up without considering that they'll have to maintain contact for the next 10 or 20 years because they have a child. And the stress and upset on both sides over the breakup is just constantly refreshed. You know what it's like if you split up with someone. You need a space from them, perhaps, before you can talk to them sensibly again. But that doesn't happen when there's a child involved. They still have to talk to each other. Usually what they have to do is resort to lawyers to communicate, which brings it into the jurisdiction of the courts and the problems with the CSA that we just discussed. And basically the attitude of the mother dictates entirely how it goes. I know of some women who are not involved in child support agencies at all, and even brought court proceedings themselves to ensure the child has contact with the father. But that's very unusual. And the ideal situation where both parents are able to put their differences aside and parent jointly very rarely happens.
So the mother basically rules?
Yep.
So where does your own personal situation fall in this general spectrum of possible scenarios?
Mine was a rather extreme situation. I'd been with my ex-partner for 3 years, and I worked from home, so I was there all the way through the pregnancy, and I was present at the birth, which lasted for 3 days. She was so exhausted by the end of it that our son barely made it through alive. And then 6 weeks later, we split up. It was a total surprise to me. One day we were family, and the next I was out on the street. So I lost my son, my home, and my business, not to mention my partner, in one fell swoop. And without the help of my family, well, I'd be talking to you from a dumpster.
Do you have contact with your son?
2 hours a fortnight in a contact center.
Now, because we're Americans, we, many of us, might not know how to measure a fortnight. So please explain.
That's 2 weeks.
So it's 4 hours a month. Oh, my.
And bear in mind that my my ex-partner lives just outside of London, so I have a two-day round trip to go and see my son for 2 hours every 2 weeks.
So how is it that you even got that concession?
I had to take it to court. And that was actually pretty much the most that the court could enforce. They just don't have any powers, basically. They're not going to... If she breaks the court order... They can't fine her because that's fining me. That comes out of maintenance money. And they can't send her to prison for contempt of court because that would essentially hand custody of the child to me. Those are the only enforcement powers they've got. They won't use them. Whereas if I were to violate a court order or just to upset the judge, I can be fined or locked up.
Now, what exactly, in England, what exactly is civil kidnap? What is that?
Well, this is actually the situation that I'm in. This civil kidnap is an extreme case of, well, one parent taking the child essentially by force. It usually involves taking the child abroad, but not always. And here we get back to the problems in law. If the father is the kidnapper, if the father has taken the child, he'll be arrested. If it's the mother... who's taken the child, that's a civil matter, and if she can retain custody for long enough for the situation to normalise, then the court will ultimately award her custody. So one of the first things I did after the breakup was to ask the police what their position was, and they told me just that. If the situation were reversed, if it had been my partner telling them that she'd been thrown out on the street and had her child stolen, they'd have mounted a manhunt. But since it was her doing the kidnapping, they weren't going to take any action.
Does this aspect of your case have any bearing on contact or child maintenance?
Nope, none whatsoever. There's no legal provision for civil kidnap within the country. The authorities only take action if it's international. It's literally the case that a child can be held to ransom with assistance of court and the child support agencies enforcing the demand. I don't know how many other fathers would find this familiar, because there's virtually no recognition of civil kidnap unless it involves crossing an international border. But I suspect that there are many fathers like me who could argue that their children were taken by force, that they didn't abandon them.
Yeah.
But the law makes no distinction between this and a man who just walked out on his children.
Yeah.
Worse, if a man actually wants to see his kids, and is forward in dealing with the authorities, it's very easy for the child support people to contact. The men who abandon their kids are much harder to track down. So it's the dedicated fathers who bear the brunt of the punitive actions of the child maintenance people, whereas they were actually formed to catch the absent fathers who've just disappeared.
Surely it's fair to assume that fathers should support their children. Is that not correct?
Well, totally, yeah, but... it would help immensely if the child support agencies were integrated into the court system and if they didn't consider the best interest of the child as being solely financial. It would be nice, too, if they'd abide by the law, even as it stands. I mean, these agencies, certainly in England, and I understand to some degree in Europe and America, are notorious for flouting their own rules and being ignorant of or outright ignoring due process. They focus on pursuing the easy cases of fathers who actually want to see their children, rather than tracking down the truly absent parents. And the only reforms that we've seen in the area of child support have been to broaden the powers of these agencies, effectively legalizing methods that were hitherto illegal.
So where do fathers' rights groups fit into this picture?
Well, with the situation being so widespread, and virtually every man I know is going through this, it's natural that these groups should form, primarily for emotional support, but also to try and lobby the government for reform. problem is, though, that losing your kids, court battles and all the rest, it, to make a huge understatement, is utterly devastating. Most men are in no state to take any action or make their voices heard, and faced with the total indifference of the state, apart from the demands for money, most guys just give up and settle for whatever access the mother's willing to grant. So most of the fathers' rights groups are basically emotional and informational support. Those few that do attempt to lobby for change are so small that they just get ignored. Have you heard of Fathers for Justice over in the US?
Yes, I have. What about your... I want to know about your group, the Save the Fathers Union.
Well, what we're about is trying to get the other existing groups actually talking and working together. As it stands, all the groups are independent and have virtually no contact. They even compete for members or operate exclusion policies to keep their members away from other groups. So there's no effective action being taken on a national scale. It's all little groups of guys trying to fight it out alone. And Save the Fathers Union wants to change that. We don't think we can just walk in on the scene and take over. What we want is for these existing groups to talk to and support each other and to build towards a cohesive civil rights movement that has, well, has enough clout to make a difference.
Do you have any advice for other fathers who may not be involved with a group?
Fight.
Could you say that again? Say that again, please.
Fight your case. The only way will be heard is if we can show a genuine mass movement. Every father in this situation should be writing to his elected representatives, to the judiciary, the charities and celebrities who might help. Today I wrote National Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children. So I contacted them today to ask them about their position on this, and I'm still waiting for a response. We've got a list of several dozen groups, agencies and individuals concerned or connected with fathers' rights, and what we want is for these people to just be inundated with letters and calls, just to raise awareness of the true scope and import of the problem. There needs to be a serious realisation of the need for change and the injustice in the situation as it stands. So, the one thing I can say to anyone in this situation, wherever they are in the world, is fight your case. No one will do it for you, and groups are only as active or effective as their members. Social services, health professionals. As I said, the Save the Fathers Union has an extensive list of who to contact, and there's really nothing to stop anyone contacting people who could and should be working towards change. Pretty much everyone is online now. We'd especially like to hear from larger, well-established civil rights groups who might be able to help. But anyone and everyone is urged to pitch in. Even fathers who are sunk in their own case and just need some support should get in touch. Every individual case is a skirmish in the greater fight for fathers to be established as fundamental to the best interests of their children.
It's frightening that many of the fathers that I've spoken to about this extraordinary situation here in the United States have said exactly what you said, and it's interesting that you're in different countries and the details are almost identical. Well, that was a father from the Isle of Wight. Gentlemen, here to join us?
I'm here, Ruthie.
Yes, am I, Ruthie.
Okay, then I will beg out, and you guys will talk tonight and carry on with your show. Break a leg.
Well, Doc, I think that Samuel may be a listener to the show tonight, and if he is, I'm hoping he'll feel free to call in. I think it would be interesting to follow up on what he's already indicated thus far. But did you have any specific thoughts about what you heard this evening?
His description of how it suddenly came apart, I think he said 6 weeks later that he literally lost everything. I think mimics the same circumstances that we see here in the U.S., that the, as we say, we've said before, the system gears up for whatever circumstance may prompt a couple or a family to, I'll say separate, but perhaps there are other words. And it moves in as if the family's a wounded animal and usurps every possible way to control circumstances at the time, and almost as if it's designed to keep the family apart. And I think I heard that from him, that his efforts went for naught, and he lost his house, his business, his partner, his son. And between the lines, I think he's expressing what a lot of fathers, myself included, have felt along the way, and that is, it doesn't seem like there's ever a system-geared mechanism to say, all right, stop. We're not going to take any more action. We're not going to separate any more that we've done. We're not going to force people apart. But let's have a mandated, very rapid time period to look over just what it is that we're dealing with. If this is two people who've made a decision, state should have no interest in coming in and saying we're going to make this worse or aid the separation. Sit back. Maybe things will work out. I think he noted there that he simply has no rights, that things can be done to and for him, and he has not a say whatsoever. I think that helplessness is ingrained in the systems both there and here, and that's, as he said, without a mass attention to it, that might wring some effort from legislators or groups within the government. There's no way to make this seemingly organized destruction of the family stop.
Dr. McGuire, you mentioned a word that I wanted to get back to. We talked about it last week. We're going to talk about it again tonight. And that's the issue of rights. Now, I'm old enough to remember Jimmy Carter very well. He was always proposing that the nations of the world start to focus on human rights. And we were very overbearing with some nations about human rights. And yet, in America, it seems there are no human rights for men who are products of divorce and particularly alienation. Some women too. I'm not going to say there are not women that are not suffering from these types of things as well. But we have the same problem now in England. And England and America are two, I suppose, some people would like to think of the more civilized nations. But we know that this thing is going on in Canada, and it's going on all over the world. So now that we are bringing democracy to Iraq, to Yemen, to Afghanistan, eventually to Iran and to Pakistan, are we saying then that these nations that we are bringing democracy to, we should just tell their fathers up front that if you suffer through a divorce and potential alienation, we're going to make sure that you have no right to see your children too? Should we tell them that on the front end?
Well, gentlemen, I just wanted to let you know that Mr. Jones has appeared. He's having difficulty from home from the microphone, but he sends cheers to the hosts, and he wants to express his apologies and asks that we provide his email. He's going to type it for me now through Facebook, and he's listening in. Any questions you have for him, I'm going to type them out. He and I are going to type, and I'll just read his response to you.
Okay, wonderful.
By the way, I just wanted to let you know, in anticipation that that we were going to air this evening, I must tell you that Osaka, Japan, wants to know where he was. Scotland, Scarborough, England, Miami, Florida, New York, New York, Boston, Massachusetts, Wales, London, England, Brooklyn and Brooklyn, Staten Island, New York, Santa Ana, California, waiting for him. Can you imagine? They want to hear this. They've been waiting to hear from him and to hear your responses, gentlemen.
That's fantastic, and I'm sure we'll have a couple of questions for Samuel. Hang in there, Samuel. Dr. McGuire, do you remember what I asked you about rights?
Yes. Where are they for men? And how do we call them rights? And I think I brought this up in a conversation we had, that at least in many circumstances I've heard, and my own, it seems that as the system gets involved with circumstances around families, that for men, and at least it's been, I felt this way, I don't feel that there's a bill of rights. I feel like I'm getting a bill for rights. That is, I have the rights that I can afford. I'm asked to purchase time and ability to be involved, and what prior to all the things that happened regarding the divorce, the alienation, I had those rights and I exercised them. Now I have to bid on them. I have to bid to review it, people to give me permission.
Gentlemen, I wanted to let you know, for the audience who's asking, Samuel Jones' email is Samuel, spelled S-A-M-U-E-L. His middle initial is Z-Z Jones. That's S-A-M-U-E-L-Z-J-O-N-E-S at yahoo.com. Again, that's S-A-M-U-E-L-Z-J-O-N-E-S at yahoo.com. And Samuel says, thanks, doctors. I'm listening, ready to respond. Do you have any questions for him, doctors?
Well, actually, I do. I have one. How's he doing now? I mean, himself. Has he had any movement, any increase in his sense that he's going to be able to turn some of this? How's his organization?
His response to what you said was not a bill of rights, but a bill for rights. That is totally true, and we're not getting anything for our money. That's what he writes.
Ruthie, I sent you a question, and the question for the listeners that wouldn't be able to see what I wrote was, Samuel stated that much of what he suffered through in the legal, if you will, web, spider web of his nation was the same as the United States. And I thought he was quite well aware, therefore, of what was taking place in the United States. And I wanted to ask him what he thought would be the, from his perspective, the similarity. We certainly wouldn't want to be similar to his situation, but if he has an interesting comment on what the similarities are, maybe we could allow our listeners to become privy to that information as well.
Did we get some dead air there?
No, we are asking him the question since we didn't have his mic on. His statement is, there is no movement, no increase in contact. He has not seen his son in nearly 3 additional months. He says the U.S. is actually slightly better.
Interesting.
Now, Dr. McGuire, I don't need to remind you that the name of this show is Men Matter. But I guess really the question is, do men matter? I mean, are we at a point in time in our civilization that men absolutely do not matter? I mean, here we have Samuel Jones writing to the Society of Cruelty to Children. I didn't have the ability to see this letter, but I'm guessing that we're asking the Society of Cruelty to Children if they believe that men matter, that fathers matter to children. Are we living in a society today where the court system, the judiciary, the brown shirts, if you will, on the streets that are doing all the home inspections believe that fathers are antiquated beings, that they have absolutely no rights, and that they should be put in some place where they're not a harm to anybody, especially including their own children?
Samuel states that 97% of cases result in total custody for the mother. In England, there's virtually no consideration of a split or shared custody.
I'm shaking my head here.
Well, what you're saying, Jim, I think is it's correct in the question, and I think it makes its own answer. And my answer would be, no, it doesn't seem that men, fathers, have a presence in how we look at the value of both individuals and families in our society. It seems that as families either go through divorce or break apart for other reasons, that men are marginalized as if we have been in some manner the cause of the problem.
Well, here's another response that he's giving you. He's saying, in England, 97% of the cases result in total custody for the mother. It is the National Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children. I've discovered, he says, that they're actually a front organization for the social services. Interesting to hear the mention of brown shirts in that context.
Oh, my golly. Now, we have legislators who must have gone through divorces. We have lawyers who have suffered through divorces. We have judges that have suffered through divorces. Now, you would think that some small percentage of these people, these well-educated individuals, have suffered through some form of parental alienation or another. Have they no empathy for men who are going through, and occasional women, who are going through the very same thing? Do they not want to make it more palatable for adults who are going through a divorce to be able to not suffer as they did? Or do they not suffer? Do they not have feelings? Do they not have souls? Do they not care? Or are they so locked into the system, as the caller indicated last week in the BAR, that they don't have any choices or options in the situations, and everybody's just going to have to go down the slide because the slide's on an incline and nothing can be done about it? Is that where we are?
I think yes. And the reason I say that is that you're right. There are a number of, just statistically, there are every manner or every job, occupation, position in this country as men and families who've gone through divorce, and there may be a subtle acquiescence to the concept that, well, that's the way it is, as I've heard too often from attorneys and social services and various organizations, that this is just how things are done. And that acquiescence, in a way, is a very dangerous give an inch, because that allows people to not just take a mile, but to take everything. And at least in my case, and others I've heard, you wind up clawing back. And in the end, this marginalization, I think, that at least I and others, and many men have suffered, becomes almost a tenet of the system, that if we can somehow get men out of the picture, that this will help, that this will make it easier to deal with situations which draw the attention of these agencies. I think a good example of that is what Mr. Jones is saying, that the state, whether it's legislative momentum or simply a societal aspect of it, which may be present here, in any conflict or situation with a family, particularly men and women, husband and wife, the assumption is that we'll move the man away, and then that should make things better, as if men are somehow inciting the situation without any reason to think so. It's just a knee-jerk reaction, and that carries the circumstance of these other agencies in to examine it, and you wind up having to prove that men are necessary or valuable, or more particularly, that fathers are of value. And I think lost in that fight is an even greater issue, if not, I won't say greater, an equal issue, and that is the rights of children. My children, your children, any child, should not have to suffer the loss of a parent because an agency or a group or some comments made engender this reaction to come in and essentially do a family autopsy, cut the parts up, put them everywhere, and see if there's some problem they can solve, when in fact that action becomes the problem.
Dr. McGuire, that was a fantastic, I think, analogy, and one that wasn't very nice to hear, but I think it was probably appropriate. You made the comment, move the man away to make things better, move the father away to make things better. And I was thinking, you know, in the year 1300, this kind of thinking was not current thinking. In the year 1550, this type of thinking was not even remotely within the minds of the families of the 1500s. In the 1700s, a family was a family was a family. In the 1800s, in the 1900s, right up till 1950, I would venture to say, this type of thing was not given consideration, that the best thing that was in the best interest of the children was to kick the father's butt out of the house. You know,
just,
in the last 50...
Just a moment. It's interesting that you said that. He just wrote, the doctors are absolutely right. It does appear to someone going through the system that the aim is to get men out of the picture. In fact, in England, Lady Justice Hale, which is obviously a judge there, Lady Justice Hale has explicitly stated that fathers should be happy with one day of contact per year. Family autopsy, he calls it, very incisive. It leads to societal autopsy. That's his statement.
So what I was saying is that this alteration in thinking, I think, has happened in the last 50 or 60 years. I think there's a lot of things that have been going on in the last 50 or 60 years throughout this world, and especially in America, that could be taken a second look at. But now we're seeing the end results of the planning that was done earlier in the 1900s, because the laws are already set in place. And we're a nation of laws. So if you're a law-abiding father, you'll put your tail between your legs, you'll leave your house, you'll leave your kids, you'll send in the check. You might see your kid once a year, according to Lady Justice Hale, and everybody ought to be happy. And you know what I say to that? I say that's ridiculous. I say that's nonsense. I say that men matter. I say that fathers matter. And I think it's time for men to wake up. And if you're a listener to this show, and this show strikes home to you, I would encourage you to find a friend. to find another father that's gone through this, is going through this, or is going to go through this. Tell him about this show. Tell him about the people that are on this show. Tell him that you can turn on CBS, NBC, CNN, and even including Fox, and you're not going to be able to sit down again in front of a television set and hear anything even remotely close to the truth that you're hearing on this show. What do you think, Dr. McGuire?
It'd be great to have a lot more people involved, because I think the more stories that are heard among people going through this, you're just going to establish certainly a commonality that's very important. And I think that that'll contribute to, as Mr. Jones said, a momentum that will get masses of fathers, masses of people, but certainly other facets of society don't want men to go away. And the collective strength of both the awareness and the action that can be taken from that, I think is the only means possible to get this reversed and eliminated. Because for all of the talk we hear, every election, every show, everything that we see sometimes politically, family values, family's important, this is a family person, family politician, but there's no definition of that. And I think that it seems that there is a move by allowing this separation, this autopsy of families under the guise of trying to find a problem. It leaves families strewn about, and particularly fathers were marginalized, and it's almost as if it's a subtle way to redefine the family according to a model that the state sees as appropriate. A family can be mom and kids here and dad somewhere else, or kids somewhere else and parents elsewhere. It's easier to control things in separate pockets. And
Dr. McGuire?
Yes?
Mr. Jones says that the Lady Hale, Justice Lady Hale, is equivalent to a Supreme Court justice in our country. And that's why it's such a problem, because she's at that level. They can actually vote on and interpret laws in government. And when someone at her level makes such a harsh statement, people who want to justify splitting up the family and excising the father then take what she says and they run with it. By the way, Mr. Jones' organization is called the Save the Fathers Union. Save the Fathers Union.
Ruthie, ask Mr. Jones what he thinks is the goal here. We know that this is wacko thinking. We know this is not verified by psychologists who have done any research on what's in the best needs of the children. Everyone knows that children need a mother and a father. So people who promote, even if they are a Supreme Court justice, if they promote this kind of, sorry, Judge Justice Hale, wacko thinking, what's the goal? Where are we going? What's down the road? I'd like to ask Samuel Jones what he thinks is the why for this unbelievably risque and bizarre thinking.
He's typing an answer now. So why don't you gentlemen proceed while he prepares it?
Dr. McGuire?
Where were we? I think part of this is, and maybe I'm segueing into what he may respond, the length of time that this has sort of insidiously crept up on us over the past 40, 50, 60 years, however we may define it, has sort of treated us for awareness and response like the proverbial frog in the pot. Just turn up the water a little bit and the frog will stay there until he cooks.
I would agree.
I think that's where we are. And so comments regarding how do we, for instance, this the judge in England, to try and undo that sort of attitude, which has such devastating impact, will require perhaps stepping down through those degrees of turning up the heat, a little here, a little there. A very rapid turnaround would require such a large, almost population-sized movement to get this to change. That seems unlikely. I'd be hopeful given the interconnectedness of social networks and the internet and the variety of means to communicate now that that might be a more rapid process. But it is a danger to have someone make that comment at that level and essentially establish that destroying families is just part of the way this country does business. I think that's a horrible consequence of that type of thinking. And it certainly isn't representative, I'm certain, of the majority of the folks in any way connected to either this personally or knowing someone would think that that's a viable opinion. And certainly it bodes poorly for people starting a family to know that there is no backing by the state for actually having a family. It seems that way.
Do we have an answer, Ruthie?
No, give him time. He's a writer. He's still typing, I'm sure. I wanted to mention to both of you that there are huge organizations on Facebook, and it is shocking when you see how many there are, and they number in the hundreds and thousands in members. In Spain, in Brussels, in Japan, in China even now, there are programs called Father's Rights, Vienna Fathers Children's Rights, Save the Fathers Union, Fathers Need Rights, Canada Fathers, Father's Rights. I this is just the beginning. I could go on. I'd be here all night. Another Father's Rights, Canada Fathers. Each, some have a couple hundred, some have a few thousand. The Founding Fathers, 4,000 people, and all of these groups have certain days in which they have marches, and now globally, they're having an international march. Are you aware of that?
I'm hearing it now, Ruthie, from you.
And here is the response from Mr. Jones. The goal, he asks, to dismantle familial and family links, to maximize the quote, economic activity, unquote, of everyone by removing the natural support networks of family and community that we do or did take for granted. Profit, basically. Big money. Just what the doctor said, in other words. CSA, social services, and even the family courts directly earn revenue out of the current situation. They have no incentive to change things. The indirect profit for the other groups is incalculable. My hair is standing on end.
When you were speaking, Dr. McGuire, I was thinking about, again, this concept of the rule of law. George Bush says we have the rule of law in this country. But when the laws change, because reason and reasoning has changed to the point where you have this type of justice making this kind of statement, now you have rule of law in a different manner. In America, we thought we had a God-fearing nation. We have In God We Trust in the back of the dollar bill. So we might believe, some of us, that we have God-given rights, the rights to be a parent, the rights to parent, the rights to love, protect, and nourish and nurture our children, to educate our children. But what we found out is we do have the rule of law, but those are not any longer our rights. So what kind of rule of law do we have now? Do we have the Sovietization of America? Do we have the Sovietization of the Great Britain? What's taking place here that even God-given natural rights that are not ordained or given to us by the state are suddenly taken away from us? And yet, there's nobody on the news talking. Bill O'Reilly's not going to talk about this. Sean Hannity's not going to talk about this. But they're going to beat the economy to death. All these things are going around the very blocks of society, what society has been built on for 2,000 years is being dismantled, and the only thing that they can talk about, and I'm not saying it's not important, is the economy. But would you rather be a rich father with your family or a poor father with your family, or would you rather be without your family? I think most fathers would rather be poor and still be with their family. They would prefer to be with their family above all. But the state's now taken the family and whatever their money had, that they would have had, and whatever money they could have ever bequeathed to their kids. So now the kids get nothing from the father, and they become totally dependent upon the state. If you have a friend, or if you have another man who thinks they ought to hear about kinds of things, please refer them to Men Matters so that they can understand what's taking place in our world today. You're not going to get this information anywhere else.
And for the 9 people who have just asked me if this is live, yes, this is live.
I think that Mr. Jones made a, in there, what came into my mind was that there's been, I think, a shift, and you hit on it, Jim, but I think perhaps, maybe I'm expounding it, the concept of the rule of law is based on our rights. I think that it's changed now subtly, and much like the frog in the water I mentioned. Now I think that, at least I feel, as if we're ruled by law, and that rather than the law being an extension of our rights to protect them, that now I feel like I'm ruled by law, and that defines my rights, which don't exist under those laws. I've heard more than one time during my situation, well, no, that's not what the law says. And that was just a comment that was directed at me when I said, I want to see my kids more. And no, you can't, because that's not what the law says. I won't go into the details on that, but I thought this is absolutely incredible. I'm being told that what I thought were my rights, I don't have. They've been usurped by the law, and the law will tell me what rights I have. That's a scary concept, and it's been frightening to go through it. But I think that that points out what Mr. Jones was saying, that there's been a move to dismantle the family such that there's no resistance to whatever may need, whatever may come the way of necessity, economic or otherwise, for the government to come in and say, we're going to do this or do this, and you don't have a bonded unit to fight that. I think the dismantling of the family mirrors, I think, a larger dismantling of the basis of most societies, certainly of ours. And I think that's perhaps an overstatement, but I don't think it's invalid.
In the United States alone, there are 40 million children, 40 million children who have suffered a parentectomy. There are 25 million fathers who have lost their children. Now, I don't know because I haven't calculated it, but I'll bet you if you added up World War I, World War II, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, and perhaps every other war that this nation has ever fought outside of its soil or on its soil, you could not tally up the loss to the children of 25 million parents. So is somebody going to tell me that there's not some kind of a war going on here? Like you said, subtle, unspoken, yet still taking place? What's Samuel Jones think about that, Ruthie?
She might be listening to him type.
Yes, we have to give him a chance to type a response once
what
he hears
think,
what
Doc?
You're saying.
We're back in
it's
that
clear.
Pot again.
It's clear. Yeah. I've talked to enough people. It's clear that this is a loss that would be similar to what you might find in a war. I mean, where fathers are removed, separated, forgotten, marginalized, disappear, all under a false pretense of, quote, helping the family. And however that may be looked at, the absence of a parent from their children will have long-term, serious negative consequences for the children. Well known, well researched, well identified, but that seems to be forgotten in all of this, as the mission seems to be, let's break the family up, and that's our job. Mr. Jones hit, I think, is a very good point. The more, and I was told this once by a former social worker, that the amount of cases that the organization handles dictates their budget. Their budget dictates their employment. Their employment over time dictates their income slash retirement. So if they don't, and as this woman told me, if they don't, quote, stay busy, unquote, they need less. They get less, and there's less job opportunity, et cetera. So the organization's self-fulfilling its desire to remain alive, remain active as an organization, and the fuel that they use to do that are families, particularly fathers, and the more they can say, we've got X number of cases, then you get X number of dollars. It's economic. It's government.
And I want to contribute Mr. Jones' response. He says, the history of the politics is complex, probably a subject for another show. But yes, that is exactly what's happening. It's a tough question. A war on freedom, a war on the person individually, and en masse, a war on identity? Absolutely. A civil war of propaganda against children, against their very identities, while they're still learning to even read.
I'd like to follow up on that just a little bit, because I think that, these responses from Samuel Jones I find to be astute. Of course, I agree with him probably 100%. But I think that part of the goal of getting dads out of the home is the very issue of education. And I know we probably won't be able to get into that topic tonight, but someone is educating these kids. And since dad's not there, it's not dad. I'd like to be in on the education of my kids. I think most dads would, but we can't. If we can't talk to the kids, we certainly cannot be part of their educational process.
Divide and conquer.
Divide and conquer.
An age-old axiom is at play here. Multiple actors dividing, but only one, the family, and particularly fathers, only one point of impact for that action. And it's devastating, and soon to be more devastating as generations of children who've had a parentectomy come into their own. It will be, I think, societally devastating and quite significantly change what we think of now as how things are. The question is, how do we stop it? I hear the music in the background. Is that our goodbye music?
You don't know. You have 4 seconds left. This show has been so riveting that no, I haven't been able to put in a commercial or a station identification break anywhere.
Well, thank you all for listening. We sure appreciate you being there.
Thank you, Dr. McGuire. Thank you, Dr. Wardner. Dr. McGuire, you were going to say something?
Oh, we should continue this on another show.
Certainly, and thank you, Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Samuel Jones. We appreciate you.
Thank you all. That has been Men Matter, hosted by Dr. James Wardner and Dr. Kevin McGuire. Thank you, gentlemen, and have a good weekend, and we'll see you here again next Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Good night, Ruthie.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, Dr. McGuire.